So we're holding here in the Rambam's Hakadama by the section that's labeled as Dalet, which explains the Seder of the Mishnayos. Before that, I did want to reference something in regards to something we said before. We had spoken about arguing on someone that comes along with a Mesoris. The Rambam saying that Halacha Moshe Sinai has no machlokas, and we had spoken a lot about Rabbi Yaakov Weinberg's position that if people come along and they say, if someone who is a
Okay,
an
here comes the car. Here
if
comes the car with Tazi. Here
if
comes the car with Tazi.
if somebody who
Please
is
mute your phone, guys.
If somebody is a Baal Mesoris or a Matike Shmua, if he comes along and says, I heard something, even if they didn't, even if they claim they never heard it, they have to accept it. There's a problem with that. There's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Pei Ches, which says that Zokin Mamre, that's the example of a rebellious elder, someone who rules against the Sanhedrin. It's true whether they argue about what they heard, Mipi HaShmua versus Mipi HaShmua, or Mipi Svara versus Alpi Svara. In other words, whether the argument is what the Mesoris was, or the argument is how to deduce something from Mesoris, is Zok and Mam in both cases. The Rambam, when he brings it in Halach and Perek Dalet in Mamrim, he says, even if he says, I heard it Mipi HaShmua, I have a Mesoris to that effect. And they say Svara says differently, they're right, and he becomes a Zaken Mamre. And certainly, if they say we have a Mesoris, and he says Svara tells me differently. So the Rambam is quite clear that this is a situation where somebody comes along and is telling you that he has a Mesoris. This person obviously is chashev enough because he needs to be a musmach, needs to be eligible to be a dayan. The Sanhedrin doesn't know that there is such a Mesoris. They're just going mipi svara. Why are they not obligated to accept what he said? I don't have an answer to that. I just want to point out that it's something I just noticed recently. I just thought about it. It seems to me a real difficulty with the pshat that Rabbi Yaakov Weinberg said. And by extension, it sort of throws a wrench in the whole point of the Rambam of there not being a machlokas in Mesoris when the Gemara says clearly mipi hashmua or mipi hashmua. That's what the Gemara says. The Rambam says mipi hashmua versus mipi hasvara. So I'm just leaving that as a problem on the point raised last time. In this section, the Rambam is going to give us a sense of the organization of the Mishnayos. And he's going to explain what is the order of the Mishnah. I'd like to point out something about it. The Rambam's Yad HaChazaka is an absolute, the Rambam's Mishnah Torah, Yad HaChazaka, Mishnah Torah, is an absolute paradigm of structure, sequence, layout. Everything follows in a very clear order. And even the order of the different Sfarim, Yesod Torah, Ava, Zmanim, there is an intuitive feel that this is just about right. It starts with the fundamentals of Torah, the mitzvahs that express those fundamentals, that's Ava. It goes on to Zmanim, which are the Yom Tovim and the special days. It flows into marriage and Kedusha, which deals with issues relating to marriage, the Isurim. There's something about it that is very structured. The Mishnayos are not structured. It takes very little time to realize that when you learn Masechtas Kedushin, for instance, the Mishnayos will start, they'll meander, totally out of order, and so on. So within the Mishnayos itself, there's certainly is lacking in it's not as if someone sat with an outline like the Mishnah Torah was done. Secondly, the Rambam in the the organization of the Mesechtis and the Seder seems to be extremely random, sometimes counterintuitive. For instance, you have Mesechtis Gittin coming before Mesechtis Kedushin. The old joke is that it says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu prepared a refuah before every makkah. You know, it's before God sent a disease, He sent its treatment beforehand. So that's why it gives it for Kedusha. It's a cute joke, but it still makes it strange. So it's interesting. There's an academic sort of explanation for the structure of Mishnayos, the order of Mishnayos. The one who I seen it, and I understand he may not be the first, was Chanoch Albeck. Chanoch Albeck was a frum academician in Israel. He put out a Pirush HaMishnayos before Kehati. He was a very scholarly person, good person, really. Not from the Yeshiva world, but he's a scholarly person. His thesis was that the Gemara says a rule that the Tanna taught us the halachas that contain the more numerous details before the one with the less numerous details. It's a sort of a psychology. We tackle a problem, we try to tackle the hard part first when we still have inspiration energy, and then once we've solved like 40% of it, the other 60% begins tumbling into place and so on. So he shows that the Mishnayos by and large go from the Mesechtes that have the most prakim to the Mesechtes that have the least prakim. There are, as a rule, it's not bad. And this is one of the tricks when you have to learn Mishnayos for somebody passed away. If you stick to the end of a Seder, you usually have less prakim. There are places that it's not like that. And over there, he gives answers. For instance, his thesis is Baba Kama, Metzion, Baba Basra were really one big Mesechta. And it just divided into thirds for sake of, for the sake of convenience. I think Sanhedrin Mak is the same. There are a few places where A, he needs to give some explanation. B, he also has a... in Zroim, he shows and he sort of brings evidence that Zroim was really two parts to it, because it goes from a lot down to very little, and then it goes back again. It's almost two cycles in Zeroyim. By and large, that order is fairly good. Not perfect, needs some explanations, and it does make sense based on the Gemishna's own klal. The Rambam gives a topical type of order, which seems to us many times dachok. In other words, sometimes it's because it's next to it in the pasuk, and sometimes because of some random association. And he goes through here all of those mesechtes, all the mesechtes, literally. And it seems almost to us forced, some of it, or kind of very vaguely connected. I would like to explain why I think this, why it definitely is the way in which it's appropriate to learn it. We know from the Mishnayos inside, in each Mesechta, because Mishnayos are oral rather than written material. So the nature when we write is that you pre-create a structure, you create an outline, and the nature of writing is that the message be as frozen as possible, and you craft it in a way where things are very tight and very very well connected and so on. And that's the nature of the written word. When you speak, there's a flow of conversation. A good speaker will not follow a script, but he'll feel that the audience would like to have this issue resolved before they move on. This is the right time to tell this joke. A really good speaker is not bound to a crafted script, and when people read from a script, it's not quality. It's kind of wooden. It's sort of some very, very formal occasions, like sort of a State of Union address, where you expect that type of address. But normally, you would expect something a lot more extemporaneous, a lot more a flow. There's a stream of conscience. There's the Gemara calls it me'inyan le'inyan bo'zinyan, from topic to topic within the same topic. Sometimes it helps for memory. So, for instance, in Megillah, you start with a mission. There's a mission in the first paragraph. Ein bein adar rishon la'adar sheni. There's no difference between one adar to another adar as regards the mitzvahs, except for this, and then it lists a whole bunch of ein beins that have nothing to do with it. There's no difference between the first basic mitzvah, second basic mitzvah. There's no difference between mitzora, muchlat, or muska. The only common denominator is each mission starts with ein bein. As a mnemonic device, it really is useful. And since when you're talking, you look for a memory hook. If you don't have written stuff, you look for a memory hook. You do want things. There's a natural flow of the conversation, and that's the nature of the oral versus the written. And the Gemara was explained. The Tana was explaining this, so you already explained this also. That is the nature of Torah Sheval Peh, and it's appropriate. And that's why one doesn't need to give a structure that's resoundingly, you know, the corners are perfect and everything fits in its place. It's rather a sense of what in A led to B, which led to C, and so on and so forth. So I think that what the Rambam's type of approach, where you have that type of thing, is fits extremely well for Mishnah, because that's the nature of Mishnah. The Rambam's Mishnah Torah is not like that at all. And Rambam's Mishnah Torah is sort of almost like a written, it's meant to be a written, perfectly crafted version of the final points, and it's very different than the arguments which led to it. One of the tricks of, if you want to smear an opponent, like, you know, a political opponent, a lawyer, whatever it is, all you need to do is to faithfully transcribe oral arguments or speech of his. Oral argument or speech, when written down word for word, sounds as if the person is meandering, rambling, just going no place. Because writing and speaking are two different modes of communication. So I think that's the Rambam's thrust. We will see, I will pick out some pieces that I think are interesting or of value. And the first one is the Rambam goes through all of the Sdarim, the six Sdarim. The first one is Zroyim, and then Moadim. That doesn't say anything here special. Then he says, V'hischol b'seda Zroyim. I don't know if you have the same page layout that I have. It's on page Mem Dalid, sort of the 1, 2, 3, 4, fifth paragraph. V'hischol b'seda Zroyim. He started with Zroyim. Why? Being that the mitzvahs it discusses are those mitzvahs that deal with plants, the plants are the basis for life. In other words, just like the food chain. Human survival is based on food. The food chain starts with plant life, and therefore the ruchniyistika chain starts with mitzvahs that have to do with plants. That's one point that's interesting in the Rambam, that it sort of is following the person's own life cycle from the basis going onwards. Then he says in the paragraph afterwards, once he had the different storim of Mishnayis, ro lechale kol sug mehen leminov kim v'masheroi. So then he made further divisions, v'kara kol min mesechta, and he called those mesechtas, tractates, or we call tractates. Achak achilek hamayim b'chol min leprokim. He then divided it into paragraphs. Not paragraphs, I'm sorry. Chapters. Kora kol echad perek. Achar kach chilek hamayim b'chol perek leprokim yoisik tanim. kalam nischiv limud. He took those chapters and further divided it. Vekara kol perik me'ila prakim aktanim halacha. And each one of these is called a halacha. It's very interesting. We, in our vernacular, call it a mishnah. The Rambam calls it a halacha. The Rambam's own sefer is written in those same levels, those same tiers of division. He has 14 sfarim, which would correspond to our Sidrei Mishnah. Each one is divided into Hilchis, Kinyan, Mechira, which would correspond to Masechtis. Each of those are divided into Prokim, and each of those Prokim are divided into Halachis, which would correspond to what we call Mishnah, or what the Rambam calls Halacha. So the Rambam was mimicking, in many ways, Rabbi Nachkadosh's work. And you see it, the Rambam also, he writes someplace that the Hebrew that he's going to use to express himself in his Mishneh Torah is going to be Mishneic Hebrew. And the Rambam is faithful to that. The Rambam's language, he doesn't go do Biblical Hebrew. Biblical Hebrew doesn't fit these halachas. It doesn't have the words necessary, and it's got a very different ring to it. It's a poetic ring. It's not the language needed for this. Gemara is way too diluted with foreign terminology. The Rambam chose Mishnah, and he writes that Rabbeinu HaKadosh was an extraordinary whiz at Hebrew, and we saw that in two or three sessions ago, and therefore that's what he adapted. So the Rambam, in his own halachas, mimics it. And then he says the first Mesechta Inzraim is Brachos, and he says the same idea. He says when a doctor is considering a patient's health, the first thing he looks at is his diet. This was true in the Rambam's times. The Rambam writes a lot about the appropriate diet to eat. It fell out of favor, you know, in the last century, where antibiotics and stuff like that was being invented, and we thought that would solve the problem. And today we're back again to diet as being essential. It's obvious a person's health is based on things that he eats. It may not be the only ingredient, but certainly essential. So in Ruchnis, it's the same thing. We start with brachas because any mitzvah that applies to our eating is going to be the first mitzvah, is sort of at the bottom of the pole. If a person eats a junk diet, then the person will not have good health, and so on. And then he says, but then once we're talking about brachas, we talk about krishma and so on and so forth. I'm going to skim through that. Most of the other things that he lists here are, like I told you before, just connections between the common. It's either because topically one leads to the other, one has some sort of connection, or in the psukim, they're next to each other and adjacent, and so on. I do want to skip down, and again, if you have the same, type of Pirush HaMishnah I have, it's the Shilatz edition. It's Amud Mem Zayin, and it's towards the bottom, where he's going to explain the transition to Pirkei Avos. I think I would like to read that. He also he had said before that there's a lot in Sanhedrin. Sanhedrin deals with the Mishpat and Dayanim and so on. And he says he then explains what Avodah Zarah was after it, because it's Avodah Zarah commands a very special place in Mishpat and so on. V'kasha nishlam lo kol ma sheitzorach elav ha-shofet. And when he finished the halachas that a judge needs to know, heichel ba'avos, he started Pirkei Avos. Why? V'zeh l'shtei kavonis. For two reasons. Ha'achas l'hodi acha amitas ha-mesoros ha-kabbalah she'emes. V'kiblu ha-rab mirab. The first thing is to reconfirm the Mesoros, you know, Pirkei Avos starts by listing a Mesoros, and the truth is, the entire Pirkei Avos is built with a Mesoros. You know, Shimon HaTzadik, and Huyo Omer, and the Zugos, and so on. And so why is that important for Sanhedrin? Ulefikach ro'ui l'chabi d'isha chacham, ulachshiva b'chashiva sal yona, lefi shegia kabola elav shuhu bedoro, k'mo ele bedoro sehem. In other words, like this, if each generation had its own bright genius who was in charge of imposing his sense of right and wrong on everything happening, so we could take it with a grain of salt and we could say, you're not all that bright, or you missed the boat, or whatever it is. But since Torah is a Mesoros, the Sanhedrin itself is really taking Moshe Rabbeinu's Torah and passing it on. It's been passed on to them, and you can't say that. So just like if you have a young doctor, you say, what does he know? Well, it depends. Those things that he learned and he's able to establish, evaluate the patient, those things, it's not him, but it's all of his predecessors who've studied this particular illness and have developed medication and treatment and so on. It's not him. It's new things. If it's something new and he has to make a decision of his own, we're obviously right to say, well, what does he know? So our respect, we need the respect for the Sanhedrin is because they are embodying Moshe Rabbeinu's Torah. You can't say, I think Moshe Rabbeinu's Torah is great, but these idiots over here are not worth listening to. These are the people that are carrying on Moshe Rabbeinu's Torah. V'chach omr, bona lachach bezina sham gamniel, v'chulu, v'omru shimshem bedoro k'shmul bedoro. So it's important to understand, since Torah is a Mesoros, it's not everyone starting from anew, then it's then the validity of it is the same validity as the predecessor. We may, you know, you may forget a case here, there, whatever, but the bulk of it is definitely the Torah of the others that we need to respect. And it's a big musahas for people. Shalo yomru mishpat ploni nekabel. Well, you think I'm going to listen to him? What does he know? Or the takana is ploni namin? Or this made the takana? Ve'ena dover kain. It's not true. Ki mishpat ena leploni ashofet. The mishpat is not the judge's sense of right and wrong. Ela shema shetzivonu boik meshama kamishal kimhu. It's an acknowledgement of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ve'omnom hu mishpat echad muotok me'ishlech v'shadors. It is the same halacha has been passed on from Hashem generation. So the first point of having Pirkei Avos is the understanding that whatever it is that we encounter in contemporary Mishpat is built and based on things that have been transmitted, we believe faithfully, and therefore we need to acknowledge that. That is one reason why Pirkei Avos is next to Sanhedrin. A second reason. V'akavon ha'shnia leim v'zu ha'mesechta musik kol chochem ha'chomel ha'shalem. The reason why we have all of these wise ethical teachings of all of these chachomim, k'dei sh'nilmu mehem midos ha'mulos, so that we possess great midos. And the ones that needed more than anyone else is a judge. If you have an Am Haaretz who's not a good person, okay, he's bad for himself, he's coarse, he's vulgar, he's caught up with himself, fine. He can't damage the community in a fundamental way. But the judge, im loya bal musa v'chinuch, yovad, he will is lost via abed nadam kulam and will destroy other people. Lafika pazet chilab avis b'musa shayte yimusunim b'din. It's something that really, really is. It's a very important piece. When Rabbi Shaul Salanter established the Musa movement, and the need to inculcate people with Musa, which means specifically to work on the midas and so on, it met opposition. And one of the opposition was, yes, the unlearned folks who don't know, haven't learned, and so on, they need messages to make them good people, and we're going to get, so people will talk a lot of Musar and get them to be good people. But people are big Talmi Chacham and Rabbanim and so on don't need it. The Rambam makes a point here that you can have a person who's learned and knows, and yet is a bad person. The person has such difficult middles. He's a big egoist. He's selfish. He's narcissistic. He sees everything through the prism of his own needs. Terrible. And when you have a chashav talmid chacham like that, somebody who's very knowledgeable, it's destructive. It's terribly destructive. For many reasons, besides the fact that it turns people off, but this person is going to be pronouncing all sorts of judgments that are based on his own needs and so on. And that's going to be a very terrible. It will cause tremendous harm and hardships. And he says, besides this, Tzorech Eifa Shofet Lischanech B'chol Mashagosim Sazavis. A Shofet needs to work on himself. Everything that says in Sazavis. Mina Messinas Bedinim, to think through a halacha carefully. Umid Charitzasim Maher, and not to jump to conclusions. So, the first one, Yimisunim Bedin. People think it shows great acumen if you snap a judgment instantly. You cut the person off in a second. Yeah, I heard they said this. Halacha next. It's an indication. It's not at all an indication of being a good judge. It's an indication of being a bad judge. He says lefishe yemayel lachrotz efshibosa din davanista. You know, if you're too quick to draw and you reply, there'll be something hidden. One of the things, yes, and this is a point the Rambam is letting us on. It's quite a sensible point. When I hear somebody's argument, it may be that I know the answer instantly, but it's only by a prolonged conversation with the person, with the give and take with the person, that I'm able usually to establish a lot of the facts. It is the nature of people that it takes a while till they get, till they bring out all the points. So going about slowly, methodically through a case will help you uncover that. Once all the relevant facts have been brought to light, on the other hand, you can't schlep it out for nothing just because you need a vacation now. This is called Inu Adin, and like it says the Mishnah, once you have the facts needed, paskin. You need to keep cross-examining witnesses. It's healthy, and to be careful not to let on where you're headed so that they could sort of try to preempt you. He shouldn't teach them what to say, what not to say. It's a terrible thing. A person who is in position of authority needs to have a special sense of personal dignity. And the person shouldn't be in company that's light, because that besides it itself not being very virtuous, it takes away the dignity that and your affectivity with people. On the other hand, a person should not be inaccessible, because kedesh liyavar acholosh. And this is the Rambam, very typical, that where the Rambam teaches you both extremes are bad. So a person who's too light and easy, he plays with the boys, and so on. He loses his authority and his gravitas. It's not good. On the other hand, to make yourself aloof and impenetrable is also bad, because there are people who need you that don't have the ability to push their way through. You can't expect to relax and take it easy, because then what happens is it becomes a vicious cycle. You get more and more involved in the taiva and less in researching the din. You shouldn't jump to conclusions. This is very interesting. We would expect that the ultimate test of a judge's competence is if he can rule with a sharp with a sharp knife. In other words, to paskin the din the way it is, no compromises. You're right, he's wrong, next. And yet the Gemara tells us that reaching a compromise is much better than a psak din. To us, a compromise is sort of a lame type of psak. It's okay. You don't know what to do, and there's not enough proof coming around. So okay, I guess we can compromise. The Gemara says that no, it is l'chatchila compromise, and the Rama says that here. V'myochal ha-shofet shelo lifsog din klal af pam, and if the shofet could possibly never paskin, in other words, by saying you're right and you're wrong, but elefashim al dinim, but to always make compromises, heidim atoiv. V'im lo yuchal efashef, if he can't, azay yifsik adin. Now, let's understand the logic behind it. So what is the logic? In other words, we know, like, for instance, in halacha of Arachayim, Yerdeya, we're machmeh when we don't know which way the halacha goes. So it's a sort of an inadequacy on our part. But it's not the way it should be. So why in Chosh Mishpat compromising is good? So the answer, I think, is like this. It is never, ever... First, a compromise doesn't always mean... It doesn't mean 50-50. A compromise means it's a division in line with the relative merits of the case. It's called Pshara Krev Ledin. It means it's within line within, like, his argument is stronger than yours, then it'll be three quarters or a quarter. The reason why Pshara is better is because we're not usually dealing with factual problems. We're dealing with legal issues. In other words, the question is not did you steal, did you not steal? The question is, in the way in which we reach an agreement, do I owe you money for this or not? That's usually the vast majority of issues are sort of legal. So when both sides are presenting arguments, there is some validity in both arguments. There's a validity in A and a validity in B. So if I were to take and strike out one totally, so let's say B is stronger than A, so we would pass like B, But if the winner gets all, there's something not quite fair or just about it. So a lot better would be the position you have in this case is stronger than the other person, but it's not absolute, and therefore I will give you more of it than I will give the other person. That's the reason why a pshara carries. A pshara reflects the truth in a way that is more true than an absolute din. An absolute din would just refers overriding. A overrides B, B overrides C, but that's not really a reflection of the emes. And he says, he needs to give the people enough time to defend themselves. And he needs to give the person time to get out what he needs to say about himself when he's defending himself. Let's see the next one, the next paragraph. Ubichlali says, Sorech HaShofer Diyas Kerofi HaBaki, a judge needs to be like a good doctor. Fisharofe HaBaki, a good doctor, Kolzman SheYochel V'Efshar Rapi Mezonos, if he can cure somebody with changing the diet, LeRapi B'Refuos, he's not going to use medication. V'Myirek HaCholi Chozok Me'Arofi Mezonos, and if he sees that it's not, change in diet is not going to do it, he gives the person various herbs that are edible. It's sort of not far out things. And if he sees it still, you use some stronger means. I don't know what these things are. And so on, minarfur samar samusos. So he says, Kena Shofet, the judge also should go from the easier to the tougher. Yishtadalas is pshara, try to make a pshara. Vimlo yuchal, and if you can't make a pshara, a compromise, yishpoit berachm nachas, you need to render judgment, but in a calm, quiet, compassionate way. V'idabal badim v'arakim, should address them softly. V'im lo yuchal l'kashach baladin, if one of the litigants is tough and mean and he can't go that, l'yoyse v'vakash yizkabe ba'avol, yizchazik alo v'yatakev moish v'shtaparim. Then he can also fight back. V'umimash roi l'shofet sh'yabar v'difach z'yad olam hazeh, a shofet needs to not pursue worldly possessions, like it says in the pasuk that Moshe Rabbeinu picked, he was told to pick people that could be judges. One of the qualities is soni betza, people not interested in possession of this world. Since all of this musa applies to a judge, hinei matoiv sida avos achas sanhedrin. So this is where avos fits in. So basically, his point is it's an extension of sanhedrin, and so on, and it's a continuation for dayanim for two reasons. Dayanim need this musa, and so on. Then we'll skim over. Then he says he goes into Karbonis. I didn't see anything here in specially of special significance. And then he goes on to Taharos, which once again, it has to do a lot with the technical details of each Masechta and where there is something similar Masechta next to it. It's not really anything that we would find relevant here. And we're holding now that Rabbeinu HaKadosh decided just to have the names of those people that were close to him but not the people afterwards. We'll see about this mishnah next time. So we're holding over here by Vero Olistapik Beshemes Matika Shemua, which, for those who have the same edition that I have, is Amud Nun Aleph. Any questions? Okay, so Mitzvah Hashem, next Sunday.
Quick before everybody leaves, if you could just take down my email and send me an email, then I can know who's listening to this year and I can send out emails to you guys. My email address is Alex Weidenfeld, A-L-E-X, dot W-E-I, D as in David, E, N as in Nancy, F-E-L-D as in David, at gmail.com. So send me an email, and then I'll have you my addresses, and I'll be able to send you guys notices if anything happens. Okay.
So next week we should be good to go. Okay.
Great.
Take care. Bye.
Thank you, bro.
Bye.